Game on 2FM.
With Gillette. Great performances begin with a comfortable close shave from Gillette. Gillette, making men's lives just that little bit easier.
Game on. Tennis.
Welcome back to Game On, and we're delighted to be joined by Stephen Higgins from CrossCourtView.com to chat about the Australian Open. It was an incredible final, an incredible fitting end. Djokovic coming out on top. What did you make of it?
Team got so close. He played his first Grand Slam final at the French and got blown out by Rafa. Then he played the final last year, won a set. Then he played the final this year, won two sets, but not quite enough. The level of that Djokovic got to in the fourth set, when he looked completely out of sorts after the second and third, how he just played a brilliant fourth set. There wasn't really much the team could do. In the fifth set, it seemed that maybe the strain of 12 hours in the three matches leading up to it, and then just the occasion probably got to theme a bit, where his forehand let him down. But that is the incredible examination of five sets, particularly at that level, where every part of your game is going to be tested, and if there's parts that are weak or loose, they will be exposed, particularly by someone like Djokovic.
And did team have a tougher route to the final? Is that what cost them?
Djokovic, of course, is outstanding, but he wasn't really tested on the way through. He dropped one set at the very start when it didn't really matter in the first round, and then was straight all the way through. For Zverev, he had to beat Rafael Nadal in the Grand Slam, which he had never done before. He had to beat Alexander Zverev, who's playing the best Grand Slam he's played so far. That was 4 hours, and then you have to play Djokovic. And I wrote a piece today about it, where in the French Open, last year he was able to beat Djokovic in the semis, but then lost to Nadal, and then this one was the other way around, and it's just so hard to beat two of the top three in one event.
And it is Djokovic, and he became the first man in the Open era to win slams across three decades.
Yeah, Nadal will probably match that. With Djokovic in Australia, I think it now stands that he's won 57 of his last 60 matches in Melbourne. So his level of dominance in Australia is somewhat competing with Rafa, whose record at the French might be the best stat in any sport whatsoever. But he looks incredibly sharp, incredibly fit. People are already talking about, you know, has he a chance of the calendar year Grand Slam? But we have spoken about that before, and you never know what could happen with fitness or other players, etc.
Obviously, that Grand Slam win puts him three behind Roger and two behind Rafa. How long before he will catch up and get by them?
Well, he is the youngest of the three. He's a year younger than Rafa, and he's 6 years younger than Roger. The French is very interesting now because it's Rafa's domain. He's won 12 of them. He's only ever lost, I think, three matches in 15 years. But Djokovic is absolutely outstanding on clay. He's playing so well. And then Thiem, of course, is the two-time finalist. So the men's is only between those three. He would have to, in my opinion, he'd have to be co-favourite for the French, the way he's playing. But there's over 100 days before then, so there is still a lot of tennis to be played in between, and you don't know how everyone will shape up at that stage.
What I love about these big events is that you just get so much insight into their backstory. And we heard him come out and say that it was queuing for bread in difficult times that gave him the inner strength. You almost forget that a lot of these athletes have sacrificed so much to get to where they are and been through so much, and often that's what makes them great.
Yeah, Sophia Kennan, the women's champion, her father was asked about what's the reasoning for Eastern Europeans having such an incredible success rate in tennis. And I think one of the words he said was there's a bitterness underneath as well, or something that drives them on. But it is astonishing. If you go through all of Eastern Europe and the Baltic countries, they've all produced outstanding players for about 20 years now. And with Djokovic, yeah, it's when you think of where Nadal and Federer came from, Djokovic had a much harder upbringing, obviously, where he came with the issues in Serbia. But there's got to be something that drives him on, and if that's what it is, it certainly brought him lots of success.
And reading your article earlier, Stephen, she became the 25th Grand Slam winner since 2006 on the ladies' side, and there's only been seven on the men's.
I have to say, it's very cool that Ruby Walsh read my article.
I have to do my homework somewhere. But why do you think that the men have dominated for so long, yet the turnover in the women is so much quicker?
I think the five sets is a big difference. Beating the top players over five sets is so tricky. If you think about it, in Grand Slams, it's only been Del Potro and Wawrinka who've been able to beat, say, a Federer and a Nadal or Djokovic back to back and then win a title. With the women's, because it's best of three, it's much more like all the other tour matches where anything could happen. If you get off to a bad start, you can lose the first set and then you're up against the pressure of it. There's also things like the second serves generally aren't as aggressive on the women's side, although they have improved in speed over the years with extra physicality. So if you watch a lot of the women's matches, they absolutely tee off on the second serve. So it's incredibly hard to maintain your serve. And if you look at, say, Djokovic actually was serving incredibly the whole tournament and was hitting second serves almost as hard as his first serve. And you could see when Thiem, who's a brilliant player, couldn't break him for the majority of the match when Djokovic was playing well.
Sophia, as Ruby would call her, she has an amazing story as well.
What would you call her?
Sophia Kinnan, but you're going first name. Your own first name terms. But her story is amazing as well. So, like, her dad is her coach, self-taught. He was a taxi driver, started working in a computer company and just, like, learned everything himself to bring her so far.
Yeah, there's quite a lot of that around tennis because it's such a difficult journey to turn a player from a successful child junior player into a senior star. So if you think of, like, Caroline Wozniacki, her father was pivotal with her whole career. The Williams sisters, obviously. So with Kennan, she moved as a child, as a baby, from Moscow to Florida. She took American citizenship, unlike Sharapova, who'd have a similar backstory. But it's incredible. You can see videos of her. She was this little exhibition urchin star almost as a five-year-old playing with Jim Courier, and she was interviewed for a network TV show and said, I want to be world number one, I want to be a professional tennis player at five.
And she was calling out all the big stars as well, saying, I can return serves to whoever, bring it on.
Well, just to return to your team, seeing as we can't call them by their first names, you feel Barty missed an opportunity and not beating Sophia Kinnan.
I think the thing is, Barty's only 23 and she has plenty of time. But you rarely get a chance when you're playing in a semi-final. She was playing Kennan, who was the 15 in the world and obviously hadn't become the player that she is now as a major winner. But she's also a player that she'd beaten four times out of five. And she couldn't find the performance needed for a semi-final to win it. Now, Kennan's very tricky to play, as we've seen, and she's obviously destined to win a major. But I think for Barty, if she's looking back where she has the whole country on her side and she's in a semi-final against someone who's never been there before, it is an opportunity missed.
Is that the added pressure for her, though? Did that kind of nearly take it out of her hands a little bit?
I think so. In the first set, her backhand was a real issue. Almost every time the ball went over there would be an error. Then in the second set, her forehand and her serve weren't quite as strong. As you could see with Kennan in the final and throughout, she is just rock solid. She just gets into her own mindset where it doesn't matter what the occasion is or who she's playing, she'll adapt and she won't lose. She won't break herself. You have to beat her.
What did we learn about the chasing pack in Australia? So the Kyrgiouses, the Zverevs, those guys who are coming up behind.
Well, there's been a steady development over the last year or two where in the Master Series and the other tour tournaments, the chasing pack have been improving. They've been picking off the top three because I suppose for Roger, Rafa and Novak, as Ruby say,
And you don't think anyone knows who you're talking about?
Yeah, but they don't consider those.
Because he's Ruby, that's why. Yeah, everybody exactly, knows Ruby.
They don't consider those events, I'm sure, with the same intensity and importance. They're all about slams now. They're all about just putting up a huge number. With Zverev and Thiem and Tsitsipas and Medvedev, they're the kind of four that are closest. Medvedev lost in the final to Rafa. Thiem has been in three now finals. And then Zverev has also beaten all the other guys in other various terms and finally seems to have cracked a Grand Slam. I think they are so close. Thiem, if you can see, he's just had to build on the relentless intensity to try and match those guys. Physically, he is about as fit a player as there is on the tour. He has weapons everywhere. He has kept improving every year to try compete. But if you think about it, it's a bit like, I suppose, some of the women players who were coming along when you had Navratilova and Everett, who had all won double-digit Grand Slams, and you have to try beat them on your first go. He's going to play a guy. He played Rafa, who'd won 11 French Open titles, and then he goes to play Djokovic, who'd won, you know, seven Australians. I think they're getting closer and closer, and Thiem looks to be the strongest, but the three guys aren't going to give them up without a massive fight.
We wrote Roger off a few times, but he's still there.
He said he gave himself a 3% chance of winning before the match with Djokovic. Now, I thought he had a 5% chance, so it was even worse than I thought it would be. But he put in a credible show for someone who was struggling with his movement after having a groin injury. If he feels that he's at a 3% chance of winning a semi-final and he's in the semi-final of a Grand Slam, bear in mind that most of the people who play tennis never get into a Grand Slam, let alone get into the second week of it. So if he's at, you know, a low percentage chance and he's in the semi-final of a Grand Slam, why would he leave? Why would he stop playing? He's coming into, obviously the clay isn't his favourite anymore, but Wimbledon and the US Open are what he's for. They're his best tournaments.
And look, he gave himself a 3% chance, which is 3% more chance than poor Andy Murray has by the sounds of it.
Andy, it seems very sad, where the hip surgery does seem to have solved the problem. He does seem to be an example where that the coating of the hip has actually worked, but now he's picked up other niggling injuries, and he was supposed to be at the ATP Cup and then he had to pull out, and he was supposed to be at the Australian Open and he had to pull out, and now it seems up in limbo of when he's actually going to return. And it would be a real tragedy if, after having gone through all the things he's done to rebuild the hip and get better, that it's the little niggling injuries that actually stop him playing on tour.
And will many of those players that played in the Australian Open or got on well in the Australian Open, will they have a bit of downtime, or will they be back on the tour in the next week or 10 days?
It depends on their ranking. So we're straight into tournaments in France in February. But the biggest events coming up for the top players would be the Sunshine Swing in March. So that's Indian Wells and Miami. And that's where the people like Roger Rafa Novak and the other top women, that's what they would be thinking about, basically. And those are almost mini Grand Slams because they take place over 2 weeks as well.
So Caroline Wozniacki, like, tennis has been her whole life. We saw her finish up her career in Australia. What does somebody so young now do with the rest of their life?
Yeah, I mean, well, she has, what, 35 million in prize money in the bank.
Loads, take it easy.
Lots angels. More endorsements, global fame. I think it's a really nice story. No one could work harder than Caroline Wozniacki during her career to be a tennis player, because she never had big weapons and she had to just grind at every rally. Her athleticism was outstanding and her mentality was brilliant. But every point and every rally was hard going, particularly when she had to play against the other top women. So she deserves actually to leave on her own terms, where she was world number one against the odds and she was a major winner. She has her whole life ahead of her. I think she's supposed to have a very nice husband and they have a nice life. And I wouldn't be surprised if, like a lot of players, she sets up an academy maybe in Denmark. That wouldn't surprise
me. Goes into the media like the two lads.
Best of luck to her.
But saying goodbye is hard. But it was, she got a nice exit in the Australian Open. Stephen, what it got off to a bumpy start, but finished quite well. It was great to see that, you know, got to see all the games, and that was the talking point: the tennis, not the conditions.
Well, that was what was incredible, because when I was here and we were talking about the start of the tournament, we weren't sure would it start on time. You had smoke that was pouring in over Melbourne. Would it clear? Would they have to play the tournament indoors over 3 or 4 weeks? And we actually ended, they seemed in the end to do a great job, where the rain thankfully cleared out all the bad weather. They had the roofs as well for the to put up with that, but they were able to finish on time. And we had an outstanding tournament. The Australian Open generally seems to be a brilliant tournament because at the start of the season, everyone's ready for it. And it's a great leveler because it's a hardcore tournament. So generally everyone plays well on the hard courts because that's most of the tournaments of the year. So again, it was brilliant. And I was just thinking of even the best matches for a change were the two finals, I think, were actually the two best matches, where you saw the best player players who got through to the finals, and they really tested each other, and there were great stories in both.
You were really looking forward to see what Pliskova had to do, but she still can't seem to get over that final hurdle.
Yeah, there's a few players, I suppose on the women's side, because they're much more open, the draws, there isn't a dominant one player or two players. Everyone has a chance, if they're at a certain level and the draw works for them, to get through to a semi or a final. For Pliskova, she's a bit like, I think I compare it to Thomas Burdick or so, but she's been around the top five and cemented in that place for about 4 or 5 years. She wins lots of titles all through the year at the lower events. But when she gets a Grand Slam, she was a finalist at the US Open before, but it just doesn't seem to happen for her. And it must be very frustrating in an era when people like Yelena Ostapenko go through and win and no one expects it. Sloane Stephens wins one, and you've now Sofia Kenin, that she's been up at the top for a good few years now, and she can't make that next step.
Do you think she has it to do it in her to do it?
The issue, her serve is outstanding, but because of her height, where she's about 6'1" or 6'2", her movement has improved, but it's never going to be as good as people like a Simona Halep or Ashley Barty or so. And in those pressure moments, that can be exposed, where she can't rally with people like Osaka and all that as well in those big kind of pressure moments, primarily because of her height, I'd say.
And just finally, what are you most looking forward to now for the rest of the year?
Well, it's really interesting to just see. I think on the women's side, it's interesting generally. I hope to see a rebound from people like Barty and Osaka. It'd be interesting to see what happens with Serena. On the men's side, you really wanted for the men's tour that team would win, in a sense, because you kind of want the guys to be beaten. You don't want them to just win everything and then decide they'll retire and not play. I hope that there'll be a continued charge from teams, Zverev, Medvedev, Tsitsipas, and it'd be great at the French Open if we could have a proper competition between the established legends and then the up-and-comers.
Stephen Higgins of Cross Court View, thanks as always. We're getting to know you so well over the last few weeks. You'll have to keep coming into us.
Game on
2FM. Weekdays from 6.